Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 18th of April, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. And we're delighted to say we will be joined by a live video Skype link by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. Well, we better get straight into it. Probably we're heading into the most dangerous times that UK has been in for some considerable time.
Well, Theresa May clearly jealous of Erdogan's attempts at dictatorship in Turkey, so she's going for her own. So today she has announced, as everybody I'm sure realises by now, that she chaired a meeting of the cabinet where they agreed that the government would call a general election to be held on the 8th of June. Now, of course, I had said that this would not happen because of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act on the basis that 60, you need a significant vote in Parliament, and that without 60%, a two-thirds majority in Parliament, she couldn't actually get this through. Well, we'll come on to that in a second. She went on to say some other things. She said, our opponents believe that because the government majority is so small, our resolve will weaken, and that they can force us to change course. She's talking about Brexit, of course. They are wrong, she said. They underestimate our determination to get the job done. She said Britain is leaving the European Union and there can be no turning back. As we look to the future, the government has the right to plan for negotiating our new negotiation our new relationship with Europe. She complained, as I say, about parties getting in her way and so on, and she complained about the House of Lords getting in her way. She said they underestimate our determination to get the job done, and so tomorrow I will move a motion in the House of Commons calling for a general election to be held on the 8th of June. That motion, as set out by the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, will require two-thirds majority of the House of Commons. So I have a simple challenge to the opposition parties. You've criticised the government's vision for Brexit. You've challenged our objectives. You've threatened to block the legislation we put before Parliament. This is your moment to show you mean it, to show you're not opposing the government for the sake of it, to show you do not treat politics as a game. She said that this was the bit that really got me, Brian. She said every vote for the Conservatives will make it harder for opposition politicians who want to stop me from getting the job done. Every vote for the Conservatives will make me stronger when I negotiate for Britain with the Prime Ministers, Presidents and Chancellors of the European Union. Every vote for the Conservatives means we can stick to our plan for a stronger Britain and take the right long-term decisions for a more secure future. It is with reluctance that I decided the country needs this election, but it's with strong conviction that I say it's necessary to secure the strong and stable leadership the country needs to see us through Brexit and beyond. So tomorrow, let the House of Commons vote for an election. Let everybody put forward their proposals for Brexit and their programme for government, and let us remove the risk of uncertainty and instability and continue to give the country the strong and stable leadership it demands. Brian, I could imagine Theresa May standing in Nuremberg, as she gave those comments.
In front of the Reichstag.
Yes.
It's very, very dangerous stuff. I think this is the Tory party now going for the dictatorship. They haven't been able to manoeuvre and do what they want. So this is the attempt to get a substantial working majority. And I think we're going to see very sinister, dangerous policy coming out of this woman. Perhaps we can just pop her back on screen, because I think the image of her here is very interesting. She's clearly been made up, no question of it. I'm picking up on this because I think this is how carefully the Tories are managing. It's not just a question of a politician going and speaking to people and telling them what's what. This is all carefully stage managed. So she's had her page boy haircut, which was a little bit hard. That's been softened. She's got rid of the pearls. So just a simple blue dress. A lot of people saying in the chat box that this is her trying to mimic Margaret Thatcher again. But this is all immensely carefully stage managed. This is the Tories.
Heavy in symbology.
Heavy in symbology. This is the Tories going flat out for their dictatorship. I'll stop at that point, because if people can't see what's coming here, underneath it, communitarianism, the big society, dictatorship.
David, you said that it was very likely she would call a general election because of the desperate situation they're in, the desperation that they're facing. I'm pretty staggered that that she expects to get a two-thirds majority, and as we're going to come on to in a second, I'm pretty staggered that the Labour Party seems to be really keen to get involved in this because they must assume that they're going to get slaughtered at the polls.
Quite. It beggars belief, isn't it? You'd think that they would oppose it politically. So you've got to say, yeah, I mean, fair enough. We sort of strategically forecast right from the sort of start of Brexit that this was going to be the case. But why on earth would the Labour Party go along with it? So, you know, has the party system failed? Has it failed the people? Because this is going, you know, this is absolute crisis management stuff coming out here. You know, they are desperate to get their agenda through, and they're going to use this method of calling a snap general in order to do it. So, you know, we've, you know, nationally, we're in more trouble now than what we were to start with, frankly. Prior to the Brexit campaign, you know, this is now dire because the stuff that wasn't being resolved in Parliament still isn't being resolved because obviously the MPs are not doing their jobs.
Yeah, David, you're spot on with this one because, of course, we haven't left the European Union. That was the big scam. We're embroiled in all of this nonsense with, yes, we're coming out, but we're going to adopt all of the laws. So we've got all of that going out. Now they're heading for, can they get a working majority? That equates to the Tory dictatorship. Or the other thing they can do is create total mayhem in that election. And then suggest that perhaps we adopt a working
Coalition.
coalition, as of course you see in countries like Holland. But the same people will control parties on whatever side they are. And what's the driving force? Well, the driving force is blackmail of politicians to get them to follow the shadow government's line. And what is that blackmail? It's child abuse.
Well, let's look at what Jeremy Corbyn said. He welcomes the Prime Minister's decision to give the British people the chance for a vote for a government that will put the interests of the majority first. Labour will be offering the country an effective alternative to a government that has failed to rebuild the economy, delivering falling living standards and damaging cuts to schools and NHS. He said in the last couple of weeks, Labour has set out policies that offer a clear and credible choice for the country. But this, David, this is going to be a second referendum. There's no question about that.
Completely, yeah. It is exactly that. It's another referendum, another opportunity to perform another political Heimlich manoeuvre on the people. You know, we didn't have the real stuff being debated in Brexit anyway. So are we going to get the real agenda stuff debated now in this general election? As it stands, no, because the same people, regardless of their party, are still there. So, you know, it's almost as if the sort of the debate is stifled, it's shut down, and we can't see, you know, the real sort of backbone of MPs standing up and saying the things that need to be said because it's just not happening. So, you know, under this is a sort of snap, which makes it worse because there's less time to prepare, you know, and get the argument and the debate out there to people. You know, it's just dreadful. It really is, and it's very sad in some respects because obviously we were sort of tipped off to this, you know, quite some time ago. And it isn't as if we haven't seen the sort of leakage from some of the sort of sources in Parliament and the Lords on this coming out in the media. So, you know, it's not good. But there isn't, I mean, it doesn't please me to sort of say this, but, you know, I did say this previously on the show that, you know, there were severe mandate problems in the government currently because of this, and this seems to be the way that they want to resolve them. But it isn't a resolution, not for the people. No, it's not, definitely
No,
not.
absolutely. Well, just to close this bit off, Tim Farron then saying this election is your chance to change the direction of our country. If you want to avoid a disastrous hard Brexit, if you want to keep Britain in the single market, if you want a Britain that is open, tolerant, and united, this is your chance. Only the Liberal Democrats can prevent a Conservative majority. Well, I don't think so, certainly not under Tim Farron's limp-wristed leadership.
Yeah, but a dangerous man because people do pay attention to him, Mike. And of course, on one hand, he's prepared to help cover up the abuse of children. So, what's keeping these politicians in power doing the bidding of who? The banks, the banking cartels. It's the subject of child abuse. So, we've got the prospect now of Theresa May locking herself and her Tories into this country, possibly with a substantial working majority. And this is the Prime Minister who was prepared to imprison a child abuse whistleblower, Melanie Shaw. So let's remember that Theresa May was Home Secretary for the whole period in which the state was aggressively trying to silence this very brave lady, because Melanie Shaw had not only been abused, had not only correctly talked about hundreds of other children being abused and some of them murdered, but Melanie Shaw, one of the many whistleblowers that held information on child abusers within the Westminster system. And what has Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, done? She's put this woman in prison. Melanie spent most of her time in solitary confinement, still in that situation as far as we know, because of what Melanie knows about British politicians and child abuse. So if Theresa May is the sort of woman we want as Prime Minister, I think we know what's coming. And if you're not sure what's coming, well, have a look at this, because this this article in the Mail was over the weekend. Devon Social Services simply making up the law in order to take a little four-year-old girl away from her mother. So the mother was branded too middle class to be a good mother. And the social worker took her daughter after she was, as the paper says, branded pushy for giving her piano lessons and because the mum had the occasional glass of wine. Now, what did they do? They basically said, oh, we've made a mistake. They paid the mother £23,000. It's already acknowledged that the little girl is terrified and damaged as a result of the experience. The social worker keeps her job. And when I went looking on the internet, around the article, what did I find? Devon County Council tweeting out here, if you're considering adoption, we've got children. Well, of course they got children because they're stealing the children with fraudulent action in the courts. But the social worker not sacked, the local authority simply making up the law and stealing people's children. Theresa May as Prime Minister, Devon County Council represents the policy of many other local authorities. This is extremely dangerous stuff. And we'd better bring in Mike Veal, the Wiltshire Chief Constable, because this is the man we've been saying to people, watch this man's video that he has had to make to explain how he has gone about the investigation into former British Prime Minister Edward Heath and child abuse issues. This policeman was put under such pressure, he had to go public with a video to explain what he was doing. Of course, all of this will be swept under the carpet, Mike, for the election. We won't be talking about child abusers in Westminster or Ted Heath. It'll all be the European Union. It'll be supposedly jobs, education and schools.
Absolutely. Well, Cressida Dick has formally taken up her post as Metropolitan Police Commissioner. And she was on Radio 4 this morning to talk about her job and where she sees the Metropolitan Police going. Well, it was quite an interesting discussion. So here she is. So they began talking about the Westminster terror attack and the question of whether we, the public, will have to just get used to more armed police on the streets, more ID checks, more physical barriers and so on. And she said, I think there will have to be some changes. People in this country value the fact that they have freedom and that they can walk about and that the police are largely unarmed. And that's something I want to protect in the future. But I'm sure we'll see more physical protection for crowded spaces. And I'm going to be bearing down on both terrorism and knife crime in London. And she used this term bearing down, bear down, on a number of occasions during this presentation. And if you look at the definition of bear down, it's of a woman in labour. It means of a woman in labour to exert downwards pressure in order to push the baby out. And I think this is very telling because we've got to remember that Cressida Dick, an extremely senior common purpose individual, is using particular language in a particular way. And so when she refers to bearing down, she is talking about giving birth to something. And the question is, what is she giving birth to?
Big brother.
Well,
big brother state, Mike. This is communitarianism. Go for it.
absolutely. So let's see. They were initially talking about crime in London then, and she said, but if it is the case that gun crime and knife crime is going up, then that's of huge concern to me, and I will mark out my commissionership by trying to bear down on violence in general and on those two crimes in particular. And what she needs to give is to give some further leadership in turn. But then Nick Robinson, who was presenting this, said your predecessor Bernard Hogan Howe would not on the way into the job have realised that his commissionership was to many people defined by extraordinarily expensive and in the end unproductive inquiries into historic child abuse on one hand and into the behaviour of the press on the other. Is the lesson that you take away from that, don't get drawn into political priorities? And she said, well, we need to modernise in lots of ways. Dealing with things that become very politicised has always been part of the police, with what the police are doing. It's something I have lots of experience of. I've led many of the investigations which you're talking about, and what a good job she's done at it as well. And she said, as well as many others that have been politically charged, like de Menezes, for example, his assassination, they are difficult, sometimes they're necessary, but as a previous commissioner, Sir Paul Stevenson, said, we would always want to be putting our resources into dealing with the stuff that actually affects people on a daily basis, rather than that sort of thing, referring to the child abuse cases. So she would much prefer to be putting the effort into what she describes as the stuff that affects people on a daily basis. What does that mean, Brian?
So your children being stolen with lies, perjury, false testimony, false witness statements in secret courts, children being abused, that doesn't affect people. We want to get rid of all that. We want proper policing. What's her style of policing? Shooting people in the head seven times,
yes.
I think.
Yes. They then went on to talk about pre-crime, about it was basically Minority Report stuff. She was saying that, that she started in policing. She'd been using this phrase, digital police. And she was asked about that, and she said, I started in policing 34 years ago before any of these things were ever imagined. It's a brave new world. And what we're finding is that huge numbers of members of the public, particularly people from younger generations, want to contact us in all sorts of different ways, which are not about picking up the telephone or going to a local police station. The world is changing. We need to respond to that. We need to respond fast to that. We need to make the most of our ability to communicate with the public, whether they want to make a report, whether they want to renew a firearms license, whether they want to engage in a chat with their local officer. And she said, she started talking about how great it was that police officers are wearing body-worn video cameras, and that they're going to be getting mobile devices, and they're going to make sure that the right information is given to them when they're at the crime scene. So, of course, what she is echoing there is the policies of Sir Brian Leveson with regard to the courts. And what's becoming clear is that we're going to see some kind of end-to-end IT delivery of so-called justice from the streets right up to the sentencing. Now, following this discussion with Cressida Dick, because what she said, of course, digital policing, it's only about making sure that you can communicate effectively with your local bobby. And it's about, the ability to use an app to report a crime, for example. But we get a clue as to what's actually going on from a lady called Gloria Laycock. And she established the Jill Dando Institute. She is the professor of crime science at University College London. And she was complaining that the police are recording crimes, for example, of stalking, bullying, fraud or child abuse, without distinguishing which of any of those recorded crimes were cyber related. She said the whole crime survey for England and Wales last year had to go through a particularly special exercise to find out that they have 5 million victims of cyber crime on which the police were largely unsighted. She said there are huge implications for how we collect crime data and how we develop preventive measures. And as I say, what she was talking about here was pre-crime Minority Report. Now here she is. And she made the point that what they're doing in the Met is really exciting. They've come to realise that they need partners. One of the partners that they need are universities. So we've already been approached by the Met to help them with knife crime, for example. We've already built a secure data laboratory accredited by the Met at the university, which any academics in the UK can use to take confidential data so that we can have the names of people involved in these crimes and we can help the police to analyse that data. And she said that the Met and MOPAC, which is the Mayor's Office for Police and Crime, have funded a chair at University College London, and that they have created the role of the director for the Centre of Global City Policing. The Radio 4 interviewer said, you know, getting people to recognise that cybercrime is something to go to the police with can be a problem. At the moment, they might go to their bank, but not to the police. And she's responded by saying, one way around that is to get the data from the banks. They have a lot better data than the police have at the moment, and they ought to be sharing it. She said that the Data Protection Act is one of the banes of my life. It's about protecting data and not people. We really need to take a whole different and radical approach to how we share data. And in another video that she's talking about, she was talking about an IT system called ProMap, a predictive mapping tool to predict when crime is going to happen. Right?
Thought crime.
Well, it ultimately gets to that, doesn't it, Brian? So, but what we're talking about, what Cressida Dick is talking about, is the prediction of crime and particularly the monitoring of people who they believe might be responsible for future crimes and keeping those people monitored. The brave new world.
It's the brave new world, and the people monitoring, you don't know who those people are. You don't know what their values are. You don't know what their intentions are. Who is this lady at UCL? What does she really believe in? What does she get up to in her spare time? She's going to help monitor the data, but what do we know about her? Nothing. David, this is an unbelievably dangerous stuff coming to the surface. I think they're rushing.
Completely, yeah. It's exactly that. Things seem to be accelerating rapidly on whatever your subject is, whether that be police, law, you know, finance, military, industry. Things seem to be accelerating really quickly. But this on with particular to this police thing of going into future prediction of crime, you know, the questions are quite right, Brian. Who's going to be predicting that, and who has control of it, and what's their agenda? Because, you know, my understanding of policing was to uphold the law and catch criminals. But this seems to be a completely different tack and, you know, quite sort of disturbing in terms of what the control of the powers are, what the separation of powers and sort of where they're going with all this, because it does smack really of an Orwellian 1984. It really does. It's quite disturbing, because where's the debate? Where's the scrutiny? Who's setting this up? You know, why aren't the MPs doing this? Who are all these other people in this sort of, you know, NGO arena?
That is the key point, isn't it? Because we look at what's going on with defence and defence pacts. We're going to come on to one of those in a minute. And we look at just exactly what we've been discussing here. And none of this is being debated in Parliament. And so where is the parliamentary scrutiny? And where is the so-called... I mean, they're the ones that are shouting about the sovereignty of Parliament, Brian. Yeah. But there is none, because the separation powers have been demolished.
No, the real government is now outside of Westminster. So it's amongst the civil service, it's amongst the NGOs, it's amongst the banking power. And where... And what do we find in that area? Well, the organisation that boasted of its power was Common Purpose. An organisation created by international banks. It was then operating behind the scenes with Francis Maude in the Cabinet Office. He was supposedly the member, the Conservative member for transparency. And Common Purpose was training the top 200 civil servants. And we know that the meetings where this was being planned, the minutes were doctored in order to make sure that the general public didn't know. Mm. So where is the government? It's not the government that you see MPs in Westminster. Something rather different is happening. And David, perhaps I've given you a cue there, because we've been saying this about the military and the military contracts. We'll come on to the military in just a moment, but in general terms, the shadow government is what's running the country.
Yeah, or put another way, the decisions are being made in the shadows. That's, you know, so, it, you know, I'm just putting it slightly sort of differently, but the decisions are clearly being made in the shadows. The decisions are not being made by the people that should be making the decisions. It's being done externally. So, you know, when people sort of see, oh, God, you know, this doesn't make any sense. You know, why on earth are the government getting rid of Illustrious or getting rid of whatever? You know, it doesn't make any sense. Well, it does if you look at it completely, you know, the other way up. It makes sense for the other agenda, for the unification agenda. But all that agenda is being done in shadow.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's look at something else. Tony Blair, the alleged war criminal.
I thought things were going to improve, Mike, but OK, we'll stick on Tony Blair.
It's OK. He's been immunised, apparently, because, well, aggressive war is not a crime under British law, according to Jeremy Wright, the Lord. What is he? He's the...
I can't help you on that one on this occasion.
Yes, thank you, David. He is the Attorney General. I do apologise. So anyway, you know, there is a court case attempting to get Tony Blair into court for starting the war in Iraq in 2003. Initially, that court case was barred on the basis of the Official Secrets Act. But that, an appeal went in, or at least an appeal is going in to get a judicial review of that situation. And Jeremy Wright has decided that he needs to step in to make sure that it doesn't gain any traction. So what has he actually said? His spokesman said that Jeremy Wright is seeking to intervene in this case because it raises issues about the scope of criminal law. It's not unusual for the Attorney General to intervene in these sort of cases in order to represent the public interest. Well, his view is that the public interest is that aggressive war is an international law thing. It is not a UK domestic law thing. This is a bit ironic, bearing in mind the fact that we're about to roll up the entirety of international EU law and bring it onto the domestic statute books under the acquis communautaire. But let's not worry about that too much. He's basically saying that the international law doesn't apply in this country, which is a bit unfortunate because in 2003, the Attorney General then was Lord Goldsmith, and he said at that time that aggression is a crime under customary international law, which automatically forms part of domestic law. So he clearly saw the situation as being somewhat different in 2003. But when it comes to the crunch, Jeremy Wright wants to protect Tony Blair. Well, we have to wait and see where that goes. But I think a bit of public pressure needs to come to bear in this case.
I'm not sure. So we better put in allegedly. And I think allegedly this is the same man or one of the government's team that was putting pressure on Chief Constable Mike Veal. So,
right. Okay.
And of course, we think that the public interest, if the public interest is mentioned, that's us. Well, it isn't really, because that rule is used to protect the government.
David, quickly.
Yeah, I mean, there's three sort of anecdotal sort of instances here that I can think of that are relevant to this. One direct from a nuclear responsible admiral to me was that both the parties had a shared agreement that they wouldn't object to defence cuts, so they wouldn't pursue each other if they did that. So that lets everybody know just exactly how the parties work with this. And the second instance is Rodney Atkinson and Norris McWhirter to bring in charges of treason against Francis Maude and Douglas Hurd for signing Maastricht, and Nicholas Lyle ruling it out in effect, or effectively just kicking it in the stingers. And I think the Trump anecdotal analogy here, for me, frankly, is the Hermann Göring and the RAF agreeing not to bomb the relevant bits of their nice capital cities in agreement. Well, we won't bomb yours if you don't bomb ours. So this seems to be some sort of very much the base of this needs to be looked at in the whips office. You know, what's actually going on in the shared whips offices between Labour and Tories here as to why they're not pursuing this, because there'll be a deal done clearly. It's not as if it's not very clear that obviously Blair's regime sexed up and fabricated a load of stuff here in order to justify and mitigate going to war and causing all this chaos out in the East. You know, that's apparent now that was a load of tosh. And why isn't he being challenged and being made accountable for what occurred? So not good. Not good at all.
Absolutely. We'll just remind ourselves, of course, that there is cross-party friendship under certain circumstances, because it was Kenneth Clark that took Tony Blair hand in hand to the first Bilderberg meeting that Blair was at. So, you know, there was no party politics involved in that case when it comes to this kind of international issue.
Yeah. Okay, well, what are we going to do about this? Time is approaching fast for the great moot for the British Constitution Group in Nottingham. I've added this morning there's a dictatorship coming. There is a dictatorship coming. And if you want to do your best to stop it, we need people now to come out of the trenches. We need people to show themselves. We need people to take action. What do we need? We need to reassert the proper rule of law in UK. We need to be talking common law and juries. And there is much to be done. So if you haven't got a ticket for that event, please get online, British Constitution Group, buy a ticket. You can pay on the door. I think it's going to be a phenomenal event. We've so much experience and expertise coming together to do with the Constitution, common law, money, children, policing, defence. It's going to be a really phenomenal event. There's still room, still tickets available, but we would like to get that hall full. Well, the good old BBC, I think this is just becoming untenable. Here's the BBC's headline. Prince William and Lady Gaga are discussing mental health. Now, of course, we've got members of the royal family now saying mental health is an enormous problem for everybody in the country. This is not to undermine the issue of mental health. Our comments are that we have to keep things in proportion. But are we seriously to take the advice of either Prince William or Lady Gaga on the subject of mental health? I just find this quite unbelievable from the BBC. This is complete nonsense. It's attacking the mind of the nation. And the BBC, I think, needs to be dealt with. Now, what's the other issue for the BBC? Well, mental health and death. And I was very intrigued to see this one. Why so many celebrities have died in 2016? Presumably that was the result of death. But of course, for the BBC, this is entertainment and arts. So we've highlighted that. If you've any doubt as to how the BBC sees death, it's entertainment, and it's great entertainment. As long as it's not ordinary people in Iraq or Libya or Yemen or Syria, as long as it's celebrities, then the BBC is going to talk about it. But if it's real death caused by the United Kingdom, then, of course, the BBC is not going to talk about it. But there we are. The BBC now says that death is part of its entertainment and arts, and the arts will be dark arts, of course. What a disgusting organisation. And we better add this one because they did a bit of work on how many bombs Britain's dropped in 2017. They were quite disappointed because the government doesn't actually say how many it's dropped, and the BBC wasn't going to ask any critical questions. So they took a bit of MOD propaganda about how many missions they've been, and they were prepared to crow about that. Actually, while I was on the web page, this came up: breaking, Everton banned the Sun after Kevin McKenzie's article on Ross Barkley in Liverpool sparks anger. I have no idea what that breaking headline means. I know it is complete and utter rubbish of no significance, particularly when you see it against how many bombs Britain has dropped. Yeah. Is it me, David, or is the BBC, I think, is beginning to fall apart?
Well, it's not necessarily falling apart, but the general public can see it for what it is. That's the point, is they've gone so far with their agenda, their hidden agenda, that it's now apparent. And, you know, we've got a stitch up because it's overseen by the government and the licence fee. You know, the whole thing just, you know, if there's one thing that does need kicking in the stingers, it's the entire BBC.
Yeah. Yeah, you're laughing, but we laugh as well. But this is such dangerous stuff. Now, have a look at this one. I'm just going to move through these quickly because we want to get back on the proper subject of defence. But death is always popular. So here's the Mail: one dead and two injured as US Army Black Hawk helicopter crashes on Maryland golf course Well, I read through this and I was quite horrified because at one point in the text it says this: a golfer said the helicopter was flying sideways and pretty low when its tail suddenly flip up. Mm. Now, this to me was this was a grammatical error. And I'd just like to remind people that under the rules of full fact, working with Facebook, tips to spot false news, there's full fact. Let's just bring it in. It says, watch for unusual formatting. Many false news sites have misspellings or awkward layouts. Read carefully. So I think we can safely say there that full fact are labelling the Daily Mail as fake news.
Yeah, good stuff.
Or perhaps it's full fact that's the fake news.
Indeed. Right. Well, I don't remember the BBC reporting this, Brian, but last week, Michael Fallon was in India. And while he was there, he strengthened UK-Indian defence and security relations, apparently by creating a new defence pact. So this was the first meeting as part of the 2015 Defence and International Security Partnership. It was with his Indian counterpart, Arun Jaitley. And it was at the invitation of the Minister of Defence of India. And so they have created this new defence pact. India and the UK will endeavour to build a range of capability partnerships focusing on various aspects of military effectiveness, such as specialised training interactions and exchange of best practices in the following areas: counter-terrorism, counter-improvised explosive devices, Air Force training, air total safety, aircraft carriers, maritime safety, shipbuilding and UN peacekeeping. They said that whilst acknowledging the progress being made, the two ministers recognised the potential for further cooperation in defence manufacturing between the UK and Indian companies under the Make in India framework. Minister Jaitley welcomed the UK's interest in manufacturing in India as evidenced through recent announcements, including the Memorandum of Understanding between Bharat Dynamics Limited and Thales UK on technology transfer opportunities for missile systems and efforts to develop an advanced Hawk jet trainer jointly by BAE Systems and Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. What did Fallon have to say? He said, as Britain steps up globally, we continue to develop our close security partnership with India. Our countries are recognised globally as leaders in defence and we remain steadfast in our commitment to regional security, growing our defence industries and supporting our mutual interests. Our nations face the same threats and we worked closely together to harness British expertise and Indian brain power to develop cutting-edge technologies and equipment that benefit both of our armed forces. Because we're going to manufacture everything over there, David, and they've got all the brain power.
It's breathtaking, isn't it? You know, our military and our industry is in absolute tatters. And Fallon's over there striking up another partnership with another country. You know, well, OK, that's fine. But they're a little late with this, aren't they? Because Russia are already in there substantially building their strategic ballistic missile nuclear submarines. And Russia are already in there building the nuclear capability to go on it. So, you know, really, what's actually the agenda here?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that what India is doing is developing their manufacturing industry. They're developing their defense industry. We are collapsing our manufacturing industry, and we're collapsing our defense industry, and we're handing it over to other countries. This is we would say this is treason, would we not?
Well, that's for the great general British public to judge, isn't it? You know, so that's up to them. And it's utterly breathtaking to see that, you know, the wanton mismanagement within our own armed services and our own industry. And yet this is sort of going on. You know, we've just seen him do it with the Germans. He's announced an enhanced defence union with the Germans, which is obviously military union or continuation of military unification. And then he's over there doing it with India. I mean, what's next? You know?
Well, let's show you what's next. We'll run through these really quickly. So we've got a bit of debate in the few minutes remaining. Have a look at this. Sun report saying that the Type 26, which is they're just about to start building, got a little bit of a snag because they've chosen an American launcher for the missile system. But we don't have any of the particular missiles that are suitable for that launcher. And we haven't got the money to buy them. So we've got another problem with another warship. This was Mail report going back last summer, where we got all of the Type 45s in harbour at the same time. They said, oh, well, this is just a question of the leave period, holiday period. But of course, we knew that many of these ships had defects. They didn't have the people to deal with it. So here was the latest and greatest. It didn't work. Many of them severe problems, and they all end up in harbour at the same time. Put this into perspective. So we've got the Type 26 with problems, Type 45 with problems, global warship. Everything's global, Mike. Yep. Warships used to sail the world, but they're global warships now. Well, here's a global warship from 1545. Bit unfortunate because this one sank on launch. But today we've got a fleet of 19 frigates. Back in 1545, 1600, we had a fleet of 39 frigates, so that was looking pretty good. And also we have to tell you that the Tudor warships were able to operate globally and indeed in warm water. Excellent. Remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah.
So where are we going? Well, we've talked about Miss Baldwin, so Minister of Procurement. She said there's nothing wrong with those Type 45s. They get towed into harbour regularly, standard procedure, because they break down, warm water. And can't let you read the letter today, but freeze it on screen and you can see it all here. And what we said is Tory MP didn't, Gary Streeter didn't want to talk about this. Then we discovered that she's given, well, the government has given £178 billion worth of development, which includes Tide-class tankers. They are going to be built, well, are being built with a fraudulent South Korean company, which is going to get the cash and the jobs. You can find that article online if you have a look at it. And what have we got here? Navy battling to save 500 million. And what are they going to do? They're going to start cutting things. And some of the options include cutting the Royal Marines. Well, was that true? It's the time, so it must be true, I believe, is the way it works. And so here we are. MOD announces the plan to cut the Royal Marines Specialist Fighting Unit 42 Commando. And what are they going to create? More rubber boats to protect the British coast against terrorists. This is remarkable, isn't it? We can't arm the warships, but we can build rubber boats. And we're now going to have these commandos to defend us against terrorist attack. I say it repeatedly because I don't know how else to explain it. It's Alice in Wonderland. This is the deliberate breakdown of Britain. David, where are these senior officers and why aren't they speaking out?
Well, that's a really good question, Brian. Yeah, it really is. And we need them to speak out. And if they don't, I think what's going to have to happen here is all the NCOs are going to have to do it. It's the heart, that heart of oak of our nation are going to have to speak out. It's all the sergeants, corporals, lance corporals. They are going to have to do it. And they're the ones that would have carried you through the battle. And it just, you know, Harriet Baldwin wants to be minister of not procuring anything, really, or destroying our own procurement. I mean, it's just a joke. But what we desperately need is those Royal Marines to wake up and look at what's going on. And they're the key to all of this. They're going to be the key to this within our forthcoming general election. And this is the debate that we now need to have. You know, is this really what we're talking about? We've got sort of people going out in ribs and using harsh language and machine guns in, around our waters. You know, these people have been in some sort of hat factory in Atherston and they've had too much cyanide. It's as simple as that.
I think it would have been mercury in a hat factory. But yes, I know where you're coming from.
Well, let's end with this one then, because apparently 30 UK troops have left the UK for Southern Europe. This is a team of 30 troops to go to NATO's Kosovo force, helping to maintain safety, security and freedom of movement, apparently. This is a year-long deployment which will bolster the mission's capability following a request from NATO to further support KFOR by allies. Now, what did Michael Fallon have to say? This deployment of troops demonstrates how we remain committed to supporting security and stability in the Western Balkans region. NATO remains a cornerstone of our defence, and by defending the security of Europe, we strengthen our security at home. This deployment follows support the UK provided in Bosnia and Herzegovina in 2015 to the EU4. So we're continuing to push with EU military union. David, just as a final comment, what seems to be going on is that the same type of model that we seem to be seeing with that so-called global trade out of the UK is going to be applied to defence, where we have this big blob of the European Union in the centre, or at least just to the right of us, but the UK forming defence pacts with all and sundry with a view to creating this massive mesh with the EU at the centre.
Correct. Yeah, this is the first time Fallon has used EU4. So this is the first reference we've had. You know, what he's just said there basically is if you join up the previous statement that we mentioned before about that the MOD made on a deep and special partnership with the EU, what that actually means is continuation of EU military unification and forming the full EU union, which they've agreed. And I've asked the question, has this been done by royal prerogative? Now, I don't seem to be able to get any answers out of anyone on this. It seems to be absolutely everyone's got the hatches battened down, doesn't want to talk about it for fear of what the British public will say. So this is the first time Fallon has used that reference, EU4. So what that means is that is full EU military union and Her Majesty's Armed Services are in it. And they've been taken in with no debate, no scrutiny what this means. So that this isn't EU Army. Stop everyone, park that one up. It's not EU Army. This is full military union. And they've even got a word for it, EU4. And that's the first time that we've seen it. So this is it now. It's out. Cat's out the bag. And everybody needs to wake up very, very quickly.
So if we take today's programme as all together, Brian, we've got a dictatorship forming with Theresa May's new majority that she's aiming for. We've got European military union, and we've got stuff being done apparently by royal prerogative without the consent of Parliament. And it's just a hugely dangerous picture.
It's very dangerous. The only bit I'd add to that is that the dictatorship is already formed, but at the moment it's still just under the surface. What they're trying to get is the legitimacy now to bring it out into the open to then let the thing run. Mm. If we end on some good news, I think this policy is being rushed through because of the speed at which people are beginning to understand the picture and are speaking out about it. So don't end today's news feeling in the dumps. This time had to come. This is the tsunami, the political tsunami that's coming through. It had to happen. It's how we, the public, react to it now. So you've got to speak up. You've got to wake people up. And that may be shaking some people awake. David, thank you very much for joining us. That's the end of today's news. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.